At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, E.
What up, Nige? How you doing?
I'm good, but I think you know what's up.
Yes, we are back for season number 6, S-I-X.
Aren't you glad to be back?
Hell yeah, I'm glad to be back.
So you said this is season number 6. What does that mean for you?
So what that means to me is I did 3 seasons inside.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is my 3rd season outside.
It's great. I love that.
And you know what, Nige?
What's that?
Listeners might be wondering, why are we recording in a car if they can hear that?
Well, for one, we have not been able to go into San Quentin since March 11th because of COVID-19.
We'll be updating you on the situation with COVID in prisons throughout this season,
mm-hmm.
and doing a whole episode on that later in the season.
And we are not sure when we'll be back in San Quentin, but we will definitely be getting dispatches from, do you remember our other co-host, Rasan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know. Rasan, New York. Thompson.
Thomas. Rasan, New York Thomas. Yes.
Thomas.
Rasan, New York Thomas. And we'll also be hearing from some of our other friends inside whenever we can.
Right. So this season, Ear Hustle is going on the road.
Yep. You'll be hearing voices from other prisons in California, from around the country, and around the world.
Of course, we'll be talking to people who are readjusting to life after prison. And we will be doing a lot of interviews outside at a safe, social distance.
Definitely, with our Ear Hustle masks on.
I love the masks.
They're great. Erlan, and we're also on the road for another reason, because I know you love to drive.
I do. I get in the car and roll. I don't know, it's just my peace.
Also, if I call you, I'm like, I need to go somewhere, you can pick me up and take me.
Definitely. So, you know, driving is like, it's a freedom. It's a freedom.
Yeah. I love driving with you because I always feel so safe. I know I can fall asleep and nothing bad's going to happen.
Do you know how I feel comfortable with drivers?
How?
I look at their car before I get in it.
Oh, what does my car tell you?
You done hit some shit before, Nigel. So I just say, put your seatbelt
okay,
on when you
okay,
get in with
okay, Nigel. Fair enough. Okay, now let me ask you this. If you were going to go on a road trip,
mm-hmm.
what would be your ideal song?
It all depends, Nigel.
Okay.
But I'll say that at nighttime, my favorite genre of music
uh-huh.
is trap music.
Can you play some for me?
Of course.
Okay.
See, you be dancing
yep.
to the beat. You just
plug like
in so you don't fall asleep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Swing it.
Hey, who you?
Okay, wait a second. All right, Erlan, before we go any further, I think you know what we have to say. You want to start?
All right. The following episode contains language and content that may not be suitable for all listeners. And there's some tough stuff later in this episode.
And I have to add on this one, there is a lot of talk about things that happen in bathrooms.
Thus, discretion is advised.
So, what's up with your love of the open road?
For one thing, because I couldn't drive when I was locked up. That was like the main thing. I mean, I used to dream about driving everywhere. But you know what, Nige?
Mm-hmm.
Incarcerated people do get on the road from time to time, probably more than listeners would think.
Yeah, like there's transfers, court appearances, medical trips.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on those buses. I used to be looking into other cars and wishing I was in that car.
And that's what we're going to talk about on this episode. What you see, hear, experience, and long for while you're locked up on the road. I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Erlan Woods. This is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia. We're back with season 6, so buckle up. That's a hell of a view.
Oh, it's in a great view. Oh yeah, that's we're looking out towards where Candlestick Park used to be.
In the UK, we call prison vans sweat boxes, aka sweaties. And the reason for that is because either you're sweating about your predicament or because you know, just because they don't have any air conditioning. And from the inside, they look like a cross between a Tupperware box and a pissy elevator. It's a tiny cubicle with white enamel walls and a greyish brown tinted window.
There's like six little booths in the van. Most of the time, you don't really see who else is coming in with you. You just go in and then you just hear the kind of handcuffs and everything coming off the other person and they put them in there. I think it's one of those moments that people just don't really talk. I think it's that moment that you realize this is it.
That's Brenda Barungi and Carl Cadamo. You may remember him from our summer listening episode. We met him through our friends over at the Prison Radio Association. They've both done time in the UK prisons, including riding in those sweaties.
There's an area of London where posh people live. It's called Clapham, and they wear white chinos and have little white dogs. And I remember looking out from the sweatbox out the windows, and thanks to the tint, their chinos and their little dog looked a disgusting shade of greyish brown, like they just got pulled out of the canal. There's multiple energies flying around in that environment. There's like macho disguised as macho. There's vulnerable disguised as macho. There's drugs disguised as, well, they're not really disguised because they're going cold turkey and puking and shitting themselves. And there's people who are just not ready for it at all, who weren't expecting to get guilty, and they're just some little guy in a suit who's not souped up and ready for that jail bullshit.
I know me, when I used to be on that bus, I used to always look in other people's cars and wish I was in the car with them or wish I was somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, did you have those moments on that bus? Like,
yeah.
I wish.
Yeah, 100%. I remember when I was in one of the vans, we stopped at the traffic lights and there was a car just full of guys, you know, guys that all looked like people that I knew. They look like my friends, how my friends dressed, you know. And I remember looking and they all looked as well. And it was one of that, kind of the realisation that they thought, oh, wait, is she an inmate? You know, and then the traffic lights went green. The drive to that prison was kind of the same journey that I used to make to go to my cousin's house. We used to walk out of her house, cross the road, walk literally on the side of Holloway to go into like the shopping centre and everything. Not once did we say, oh my God, I wonder how many women are in that prison. It never even crossed our minds. We talked about, you know, somebody's got a boyfriend or somebody likes or got a crush on a boy. You know, that was what we talked about. And it was like all of those moments flashed before me. It's like you can see your younger self as a spirit walking down that road. You can see your younger self just reliving that, not knowing that the older you is sitting in this van.
Londoners who've been affected by the jail complex show solidarity by waving at sweatboxes or slapping them when they're stuck in traffic. And I always thought that was a good gesture. It's a good bit of... How do I put it politely? FTS? You know, you lot know what that means?
No, what's that?
Oh, maybe you got to bleep out my swearing, but fuck the system.
Oh, FTS. Oh, fuck the system, yeah. Out here is FTP. Fuck the police. So it seems like we have the same sentiments around the world.
Yeah, I guess that's worldwide.
Just listen to this intro.
Okay.
You remember this, you're shackled. All those guys sweaty, hot.
That is Carlos Flores. He was in San Quentin with you, mm-hmm. And he's actually been on our show a few times.
So this one time, mm-hmm. We were in the studio getting set up, and he mentioned that he'd been listening to the song Hotel California, and he had a theory about it.
Yeah, he did. He claims that Hotel California is a song about being incarcerated, and it starts in a prison bus.
So you feel it in the music. You feel this is a serious thing. So when we get transferred to prison, you're literally on this bus. Most of the prisons are in highways. They usually transfer you at night, safety things. And they're dark. The warm smell of colitas, in Spanish, cola means ass. So the warm smell of colitas rising up in the air, you can smell it. It's dingy on the buses. Then when you get to the prison, you do see a shimmering light. They look like little cities. And when you're approaching, I remember, your head does grow heavy. It's like, fuck, it's about to get real right now. It's scary. It's scary when you first go to prison. And I'll take it from there.
Do you remember the way this came up in the interview? We were just getting warmed up, and we asked Carlos how he was doing.
Right. And Carlos, who'd been out of prison for a while at this point, said he was having a tough time adjusting to life on the outside.
And this one line from Hotel California summed it all up for him.
Last thing I remember, I was running for the door, had to find the passage back to the place I was before. I think that's like an allusion to like what we were before we went to prison. I'm adjusting mentally, waking up out of that fog of like whatever we created when we were in there.
So you didn't just snap back to the streets?
No.
Like, oh, I'm back.
No, hell no. I haven't completely come back. I'm trying to find the passage back to the place I was before. Anybody who says it's about American excess in life, they don't know what they're talking about. Because when you listen to the words, that guy,
he was doing time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Carlos has this stack of evidence here that Hotel California includes stuff about prison. For example,
I heard the mission bell. The mission bell being...
The mission bell chimes.
You send a missile.
Those are the gangs that are calling you on a mission.
You want a mission, the alarm sound.
I mean, he does literally say, we're all just prisoners here.
Then she lit up a candle and she showed me the way. They're taking you to your cell. You know, back how they dance in the courtyard is fighting. Last thing I remember, I was running for the door. They stab it with their steely knives, but they
just can't kill the beast. I hate how I know all the lyrics to this song.
Oh, there's plenty of room at the Hotel California. I think that's pretty, there's room for you, plenty of room.
So, what do you think, Naj?
You know what? I love his enthusiasm. I think it's great that art is so open that you can see whatever you want to see in it. What about you?
I don't see that much, though, from that song. But, you know, I hear you, Carlos. I feel you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another musician that I think was serving time or served time.
Oh, really? Who?
Adele.
What? Why do you say that?
Because she has songs that only a prisoner could write.
Like
what? You know
what
I'm saying? Like, Hello from the Other Side.
Hello. It's me.
So when you were on that bus, does your head get heavy like it says in Hotel California?
I think after a while, everybody's head get heavy and you lean it on that that window if you sit next to it.
What's it like on the bus?
Well, first of all, it's called the Grey Goose. It was used to be silver back in the day.
Okay.
They called it that. And, you know, you had these paper suits on that you're wearing.
Okay, wait, I've got to understand what these paper suits are like. Please explain that.
They're like see-through, you know?
Like paper you would write on?
No,
like Tyvek?
No, it's almost like those HAVAC, what they call
them? Oh, the hazmat suits.
Hazmat suits.
Okay.
It's almost like the hazmat suit. And, you know, the suit is see-through, and you would see, vaguely see some shit, but...
All right, so wait, give me a visual of the bus. You get on there, what is it like?
You get on there, and usually when you get on the bus, that's when they put the ankle shackles on you. Because like right when you're standing outside the bus, that's when they're putting the waist chain and your handcuffs on you and you're cuffing you to the waist. And you know what, Nige?
What?
When you're shackled on that prison bus and the guards had the guns, you feel like you're on a slave ship.
Oh, God.
And when you pull into prisons, it's like, you're pulling into a port and you're stripped, then searched, then checked, and it has this eerie feeling as if you're being sold. And you have no control over where you're going.
Tell me about that bus. Is it like a school bus, you know, with like two seats on either side?
It's like a Greyhound bus.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, instead of the cushy seats that the Greyhound buses have,
yeah,
they had these little hard plastic seats.
Yeah. Okay.
And you have to deal with these COs.
And every guy we talked to about this had something to say about how the COs act when they're on those transport buses.
Any of you motherfuckers talk, I'll pull this bus over and kick your ass.
And you'll have a whoop so ass because we ain't taking you to the doctor.
And if you get up without asking,
to go to the restroom, you will get DP'd.
So what does DP mean?
Discipline. Physically disciplined.
And if they do hear some talking, they're gonna stop the bus, pull you off the bus, and give you a little bit of, what do they call it? They used to call it, what was it?
Road therapy.
That's what they do.
I mean, just a gang of threats. They threatening the shit out you while you're on the bus.
Well, and what's the longest ride that you've been on?
It was 3 days, going from prison to prison to prison to prison to prison, collecting everybody that was going to the shoe and other places. And we went all the way up north to Crescent City, which is like Eureka.
Oh, you're almost in Oregon at
that point. Actually, we went through Oregon to get to Pelican Bay.
Oh, my God.
And then they'll stop at one of the prisons and you will stay there overnight. And sometimes they don't even put you in a cell. You'd be in a hallway just sitting on a bench all night waiting on them to come get you. But I say this, Nige.
Uh-huh.
I've had some epic-ass rides.
Oh, I believe you.
But not like my boy Ali.
My name's Ali Tambora. I served a little over 12 years in the California Department of Corrections. Been home about 4 years now. Back, I want to say it was around 2008, I got transferred away from San Quentin because they needed the cells for higher custody incarcerated people. And since my points had dropped, I was like in this limbo spot. So they shipped me off to the California Men's Colony.
We've got to explain this. So when you start out in prison, you start out with a certain amount of points.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do good stuff while you're inside, like having a job or going to college, you lose some of those points.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start to do bad stuff, points get added.
Yep. But because Ali had lower points, CDCR decided to transfer him to another prison,
mm-hmm.
the California Men's Colony, for short, CMC.
And when he gets there, he says that it sucks.
You know, people are funking down there, having these little mini riots and stare-offs, and, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, man, why did they send me back to this stuff?
Okay, but the thing that is really difficult for Ali is that he had been taking college classes at San Quentin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a program like that at CMC. So when he got transferred, all of that stopped.
And so Ali started doing everything he could to get back to San Quentin.
The executive director of the college program is like, look, just hang tight. We're going to try to get you back so you can finish your college degree. And I was like, okay, cool.
Pretty soon, Ali got called to a classification hearing, which is an administrative thing you have to do before you're transferred.
So when they called me to classification, I'm like, yeah, she did it. She's getting me back to San Quentin. So, man, I was happy. People trip because they don't think we have happy days in prison. But, man, that was one of them happy days. So I go up into the classification hearing, and they're like, yeah, we'll put you up for transfer. And I'm just sitting there, got my arms folded a little bit, you know, thinking, yeah, all right, they did this. They said, yeah, you're going to an out-of-state facility.
Out-of-state facility?
Nah, yeah, they used to do that. They used
to
do that a lot. That shit was common when the federal courts told California to lower their overcrowding.
And man, I was just like, well, you gotta be kidding me. I'm supposed to be going back to San Quentin. And in those classification hearings, they don't even let you talk, man. I tried to talk. They're just like, well, bring that up with your counselor. And I went back to the dorm. I was devastated.
So Ali facing another long ride on the Grey Goose. This time, he's headed out of state. And a world away from San Quentin and the college classes.
Ugh. And it's like when you move anywhere. It's like you're starting a new life. Only in this situation, you have no control over it. You have no idea what that life is going to be. You're taken away from everything that's familiar. And your life is totally in somebody else's hands.
This is exactly what Brenda Barungi went through. A little while into her incarceration, she got transferred out of that prison near her cousin's house to another one way outside of London.
So we went from multicultural kind of streets to no black, no ethnic, no nothing. Like, it's just white people. You know, I think that journey for me was the most fearful, most heartbreaking, because I was like, nobody looks like me. There's no black people. There's not even an Asian person. Like, what's happening? As we went deeper and deeper, like, away from London, my whole, like, if I can say it, my life was ending. Like, again, I felt like a part of me was being taken. when we finally got to the prison, I saw a black man. I saw this black guy in the prison uniform. You know, I can tell he's an officer. And he opened the gate for us. And that was the first black person I'd seen in like 3 hours. So I said, okay, you know, maybe it's okay here. But that would be the last black officer I saw. Like, you know.
And he at the front gate.
And he at the front gate. He ain't even in there with me. I can't even holler at him to talk to him. Like, hello, fellow black man. Do you understand what's happening here? No, he ain't here.
So I'm thinking I'm going straight to out of state, right? No. They come pick me up. They take me to Wasco State Prison.
So Ali doesn't get to Arizona right away. He has a layover at Wasco State Prison in California.
Wasco?
That's one of them towns that you only hear about because they got a prison there.
Oh, okay. And Ali says this prison is actually worse than CMC.
And man, the first day I was there, they mixed the wrong gang members together. They mixed a Sereno and a Norteño. And so it was, they start fighting and I get the overspray of that OC spray. And that stuff is, it's human raid is how I describe it. You just, right? So man, I'm at Wasco sitting in my cell on fire, burning up from this pepper spray, thinking, how did I get here, right? How did I get here? How can it get any worse?
3 weeks later, Ali finally moves on from Wasco.
So finally, the bus came at like midnight, loaded me on the bus, and we drove all the way to Arizona listening to country and Western music that the COs played on the bus. I like all kinds of music, but I don't like country and Western. You know, my dog died, my truck broke down, my old lady left me. Just depressing all the way to Arizona.
I'm gonna cut in here because Carl Cadamo might take issue with Ali's assessment of country music.
I remember one time I was going up to the north of England, like the Midlands of England, I was going up the M1, which is the big motorway, in a sweatbox, and from London, and it was like a 4-hour journey or something like that, and they were playing the worst music, man. They were playing all this like Lady Gaga, Katy Perry kind of. It's not my thing, I'll put it like that. So I was like, just turn the fucking radio off, man. Like,
you're torturing us.
Yeah, I feel like I'm fucking locked in a McDonald's. Turn this shit off. So they turned it to some different radio, and then that Johnny Cash tune, Hurt. I don't know if listeners will know it. I'm not even going to try and sing it. I'm not that type of guy. Oh, no, the first lyric on it is like, I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. And I heard that come through the radio. I was like, yeah, leave it on that station. This is a tune, man. This is a fucking banger. And a couple boys on the bus were like, no, allow this shit, man. It's some emo bullshit. This is some, like, slit your wrist shit, man. I'm not listening to this shit. And I was going, shut up, you lot. So I'm listening to this. I'm having my one bit of Johnny Cash, and then you lot can have your fucking Lady Gaga saccharine teenage girl bollocks. They were like, rah, Carl's emotional, man. He's getting emotional, like, trying to wind me up. It's all fun and games. Like, it's not, do you know what I mean? Like, we were just having a laugh, really. It's not too serious.
They were all just taking a piss, as the Brits say.
Yep, taking the piss. But then they got to the prison, and the officers in reception had heard about how Carl responded to that melancholy Johnny Cash song.
I go into the reception, and they were like, right, so single cell, high risk to other prisoners. And I was like, I'm a good guy, man.
We're going to get back to Ali, who is still on the road trying to get back to San Quentin, right after this quick break. And I like that country music.
Listen. the next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been 19 months since Ali was transferred out of San Quentin and away from his college program, and he's been trying to get back ever since. Mm-hmm.
But instead, he wound up in a prison in Arizona.
So I get to Arizona, right? And I get in the cell, and I'm telling my new bunkie, I'm like, yeah, man, they're going to get me back to San Quentin. I was in a program there. He looks at me, he says, no one leaves here. I'm sitting in the cell, you know, days go by, my property comes, about 2-3 weeks in, they transfer me out of that unit into a permanent housing, and all my hope was gone. You know, the hope was gone, like the hope was like, I was going back to San Quentin, I was just like, I'm stuck in Arizona.
Months go by.
And then one day, so guards came to my door, and they was like, you got a phone call. And you know how that is. You know, every time that's happened to me in my life while I was incarcerated, it's to let you know that someone in your family died. So they come, they handcuff me, take me to the program office, and, you know, there's a lieutenant sitting there, and, you know, they have the chair flipped around backwards so you can sit in it with handcuffs on, and guy dials a number, and someone picks up on the other side, and they say, hey, is this Mr. Tambora? I says, yes. Is your CDC number, you know, F17843? I'm like, yes. She says, were you in a college program at San Quentin? I said, yes. Yes, I was. It said, would you like to go back? I said, yes, I do. They instructed me, you know, not to let anybody know, just keep it under wraps. And, because they, you know, this is, I don't know how they did it or what they did, but this is something that's rare, right? This doesn't happen. And so, you know, I went back to my cell, and first thing I did was tell my cellie. They don't understand the code, you know what I mean? I'm not gonna not give that information out, man. If I could get back, that means someone else could get back. Once I saw that California Grey Goose, they call it, that bus parked out there at the prison in Arizona, and they came with the chains and, you know, chain you up, shackle you up. And I mean, at least I did feel like a slave, but I felt like a slave is being sold to a better place. I'm going to a better plantation, you know, greener pastures.
Ali is finally headed back. But you know that Grey Goose doesn't run express.
Nope, it definitely does not. Ali's trip back took 3 days. And he stopped at 5 different prisons before he got to San Quentin.
And another thing about prison transport, you do not get to choose who's on that journey with you.
And during one of those layovers at another prison, Ali was unlucky enough to get stuck with a guy named Washington.
He just wouldn't shut up. Man, I'm irritated. I'm thirsty. My wrists hurt. My back hurts. I mean, I've been on the road literally shackled for 2 days, over 2 days. And they gave me a piece of chicken at Soledad. We got there in time for like a hot meal. That was the best chicken I've ever had in my life. And for a while, this dude Washington that was running his mouth, I didn't even hear his mouth, right? Because I'm just eating this chicken. And I'm like, ah. Then but when the chicken was over, Washington, blah, 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 running his mouth. And I remember, officer says, hey man, the bus doesn't come till tomorrow, 6 a.m. Does any of you guys want to be housed in the hole overnight? man, I raise my hand, send me to the hole, thinking that I'm winning, right? I'm gonna finally be able to lie down. Man, there's doo-doo everywhere in this cell. There's doo-doo on the mattress, there's doo-doo all over the sink, there's doo-doo on the floor. I mean, man, I was just like, oh, God and baby Jesus, right? So I get the mattress and I turn it over and there's doo-doo on the other side too. So then I figure out, all right, I could fold the mattress in half and there was a doo-doo free zone.
The next morning, Ali gets to leave the doo-doo dwarf.
Nah, you can call it the shithole.
Okay, the shithole. And then he lines up with the other guys for his final transfer.
So they shackle us all up. This dude Washington's in the front of the line. They open the door for us to go outside to where the bus is. Washington goes through and they close the door. Boom. Wait right here. All I hear is, ow, 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 oh, goddamn motherfuckers. Take these off. You gonna beat me up. Oh, you know. And then it went silent. We get on the bus. They're done. A lot of people don't know, but like inside the buses, they have an isolation cell there for protective custody incarcerated people. So they had thrown him in there upside down. So when we were getting on the bus, he was still trying to right himself, right? And he's cussing and screaming and he's saying, this is gonna be the worst fucking bus ride of your lives. You motherfuckers gonna listen to me the whole time, you punks.
This guy would not shut up.
Nope. And the bus is about to leave. Then one of the guards gets out and starts unloading boxes from the back of the bus.
So like, now we're telling, dude, shut up, man, shut up. They're taking our property off. They're gonna do stuff to our property, because that's what they always threaten. And he's still running his mouth. And so there's a brother on the other side of the bus. He's giving us a play-by-play. And dude goes, hey, and this is how I knew the cat's name, is they go, who's Washington? He goes, oh, it's me. Oh. He's really going off. So I'm thinking, oh, they're going to leave this dude's property here. Man, the bus backs up and it's like, ba-doom, ba-doom, right? And then it goes forward, ba-doom, ba-doom. And then it backs up, ba-doom, ba-doom. So they're running this dude's property over, man. They put it all behind the wheel of the bus. And then on the last pass, I'm looking across the aisle and I just see lotion squirt up the window.
Oh my God, Erlon.
Yep. Fucking with your property is one of the main things COs on the Grey Goose threaten you with. And they're not kidding.
Yeah, clearly.
They're serious.
So then the correctional officer gets back off the bus and he gets three brand new boxes and a broom and a dustpan. And so he takes this dude's property, sweeps it up, puts it in brand new boxes, puts his labels on it, and puts it back on the bus.
I'm Brandon Davison. I did 3 terms and 5 violations over a period of 10 years. I was just on that revolving door cycle, man. I'd get out, I'd take my gate money to the Drug Connect, and I'd be back in a week. I grew up in a broken home. Both my parents were drug addicts. My dad was in and out of prison when I was a kid, so I started getting arrested early, like 12 years old. By 16, I was smoking meth, and when I first went to prison was just a couple weeks after my 18th birthday.
Brandon had been at Wasco State Prison.
But they were shutting down a building there and moving a bunch of guys 4 hours north to Old Folsom.
So the morning we transpack, they get you up super early. You're in a paper jumpsuit. They put the shackles on you. They put all your property on the bus, right? We get on the bus and they say what they always say, when the wheels are moving, shut up. And so me, I thought I was kind of a hard ass, right? Like, I ain't listening to no cop. So as soon as we're rolling down the 99 freeway, like I strike up a conversation. So I'm talking to the dude next to me and the cop in the front, he goes, hey, shut up. The wheels are moving. Don't make me tell you again. And I'm like, whatever, right? So I'd be quiet for a while. And then after a little bit, I strike up a conversation again, and I'm talking to this dude, and I get all animated when I talk, and I talk kind of loud. And this bus driver goes, "Hey, what's your name?" And I go, "Davison." He goes, "All right, Davison, I got something for you." So then I was like, uh-oh, what does that mean, right? So we get, I shut up the rest of the bus ride because I'm like, man, am I going to get beat up? Like, I don't know what's going to happen.
They get to Old Folsom, and everyone's lined up to get their boxes.
And Brendan sees the COs are checking all the names on the boxes.
They were like, nope, Johnson, nope, nope, Washington, nope, oh, here's Davison. And they go and chuck the bags back on the bus. And I go, hey, wait a minute, that's my property. And they go, we know. We told you to shut up. And I was like, oh. And they just shut the compartment. And I was like, oh, I see what's going on. Man, I didn't see my property for 3 months.
Mm. And what kind of property did you have in there?
And man, I mean, I have my fan, my radio, you got your sweats, you got, you know, personal clothes, all my letters, my pictures. I think I had a little bit of canteen, some drawings, just everything that I had, because you don't take nothing with you on the bus. It's all in the bag. So I didn't have nothing. I didn't have a toothbrush. I didn't have soap. I didn't have nothing, man.
But you know what? As hard as it was for Brandon, there was kind of a silver lining to all this time on the bus.
As I got old enough to where, like, I could travel on my own, I never did. I was always on drugs. I was always trying to hit a lick. I was always just worried about the next come up and the next bag of drugs, right? So I had never traveled, right? Like, the farthest north I had been was, like, 30 minutes, and the same with going south. And so the most I had ever traveled in my life was when I finally caught a bag to go to Old Folsom. When we were driving north on the 99, I was sitting there, and I was like, man, like, I'm finally getting to travel. And so I sat there staring out the window, man, just like, wow, like, this is what the rest of California looks like. But it was like, ah, but like, I'm on a prison bus.
My name is Matthew Hearn. Altogether, I served about 13 years. My first 5.5 years, I did state time. And then after that, I finished up in the feds.
And one thing about federal transportation is that a lot of times you're shackled to another person.
They'll just do the waist chains with the, you know, your hands on your side, and then you got the ankle chains on too. And then at our waist chains, we're chained to somebody else with about maybe 8 inches of slack between us. This particular individual that they had chained me to, he was undocumented. He didn't speak very much English. And, He looked real sick, like he was keeled over. You know, he was sleeping for a large portion of it. And then all of a sudden he woke up and he's like, hey, you know, Benio. And I was like, okay.
In order for this guy to use the bathroom, he and Matthew, who is chained to him, need to do this little two-step dance all the way down the aisle of the bus to one of those tiny bathrooms in the back of the bus. A bathroom with no door on it.
Oh.
He goes into the bathroom and he drops his pants to as much as he can and he turns around to take a shit. And I was like, oh no. Oh no. Cause like, there's no like, I gotta be up on him. You have to be there. And the bathroom didn't have toilet paper this time. So not only when he gets done taking a shit, he can't even wipe his ass. And I'm yelling at the COs. They tell us, you got to wait for the next stop. Whenever the next stop is, we'll do it. So this man just had to, he had to pull his pants up. And, you know, we had to sit for like another 45 minutes till they did a stop. Then they put toilet paper in there. And then we went back there and then he took another shit. And then about an hour before we got to our last destination, man, he had to take another shit. And it was just like the worst. It was like, you know, he's sick. Like, you, like, this is when I start to understand that this man is just like real, like he's really sick. So now it's all starting to make sense, but it just doesn't make my ride any better at that time. You're hot. You're sitting over there, you're upset. You're mad at the world, you're mad at these cops, you're mad at this dude, you're mad at yourself. You know, you're mad at everybody at that point. Worst bus ride I ever had.
Matthew also told us about something the feds do called diesel therapy.
So if I've ever done something that is an egregious offense to administration, they'll do diesel therapy, which is they're going to put you on a bus and you are never going to find a home. So you're going to get out and they're going to be like, oh, well, we got to take you to all the way across the country. And then you're going to go on to the bus ride. And then once you get there, they're going to be like, oh, no, we got to take you over here. And you, basically, you're stuck in perpetual transit. And they do it so much that your mail doesn't even catch up with you.
Damn. So how long would that last? About a month?
Diesel therapy? Yeah. No, there's people been on diesel therapy for 3-4 years. Those buses are running nonstop. So they're just going to be on the next bus.
That's deep, man.
Yeah, that's, you know, some of their punishments are limited. Well, that punishment in particular isn't limited. They could transfer you and transfer you and transfer you, and then you're just stuck on a bus all the time.
My name's Jack Corey. Presently, I am a special deputy with the Eau Claire County Sheriff's Department in Wisconsin. Actually, all that means is I do prisoner transports.
Okay, wait. We have to pause for a moment and acknowledge this is one of the rare moments that a CO, aside, of course, from our beloved Sam Robinson, has agreed to talk with us.
Hell yeah. Jack is not a California CO, but he's a CO. He lives in Wisconsin and started driving prisoner transports 11 years ago.
Yep, and that was after 3 decades as a police officer.
He drives prisoners from jail to prison for medical trips or for court appearances that are often all the way across the state.
And he says court trips can get a little ridiculous.
There was one week in particular, it just was so stunning. Absolutely every person we brought back for a hearing, none of them saw the judge or had a hearing. There were probably about 25 or 30, if not more. Every person we transported that week, none of them resolved one point whatsoever.
What's crazy is that a lot of times they could accomplish everything they need to through a teleconference.
But for some reason, judges often want to see people in the flesh.
So it sounds good that they want to know the people that they're dealing with. But if you're bringing a guy across state to say, how do you plead? Guilty or not guilty, not guilty. Okay, we'll see you in a little while. And you take them back. I mean, they're not doing anything. This is when it gets a little bit silly.
So Jack is driving folks back and forth across the state. He's really spending a lot of time with these people he's transporting.
Right. And sometime he sees some tough shit, like this one transport he drove.
And heads up, the next bit mentions attempted suicide.
It was a young lady, it was a girl. She was a 14-year-old girl. She was actually from another state. Her relatives literally drove her from Minnesota to Wisconsin, dropped her on the street, and said, good luck. And she wound up with our agency on a mental health commitment. And she had real issues. I mean, a lot of severe abuse issues. And she had a psychiatric condition where she would eat anything called pica. And they gave her a sandwich to eat before the transport, and instead she ate the plate, which was a porcelain plate. She broke it up and ate the plate. And so they had to hold her a couple of days to get that out of her system. And they decided that to make the transport easier, they were going to put her to sleep. And so they gave her Haldol, and that was supposed to keep her asleep for the whole trip. Well, halfway through the trip, she woke up, and then she decided to try to hang herself with the seatbelt in back. And so then my partner had to go and sit back there with her for the remainder of the trip. And I don't know whatever happened to her. I have no idea where she's at right now. And that's hard.
When incarcerated people get on his prison transport,
Jack says he tries to keep one thing in mind.
This is a bad day for them. This is about as bad a day as it gets. There are a couple of steps higher, it could get worse, but not many.
Notch.
Yeah?
I gotta say, so many of the stories we hear about COs in transit buses are really cold. You know?
Yeah, it's almost like in every story, the COs are mistreating incarcerated people in one way or another.
Yeah, them COs be on a power trip. I had to ask Jack about that.
It's like, you're going to be quiet. We're going to pull this bus over, throw your property off, beat you up, kill you.
Yeah.
Have you been in the presence of other officers like that? Or is it a tactic? Is it a power trip?
Well, the answer to all that is yes. But no, those guys are out there. We've met them. We know who they are. I can think of some guys that I worked with that were like that. And thankfully, they're no longer working for the agency. And I'd like to say that I'm the norm. Believe me, I am not.
I remember driving up to San Quentin, right?
My boy Ali, 3 days after he left the prison in Arizona, he finally made it back.
And a lot of the people on the bus, man, this is their first time going to prison. You know what I mean? They come from the county jail, and there's some transfers on there. But me, I'm like, I got a big giant grin on my face. I'm happy. And I know people must have thought I was crazy, man. Why is this guy happy to go to prison? We went in those gates, man. I was just grinning ear to ear.
By this point, Nige, It had been almost 2 years since Ali was transferred out of San Quentin.
Yep. And when you're gone that long, people really assume that you're gone for good. Like, you are out.
Yeah.
And I get off the bus, and I get in R&R, and the first person I see is this guy, Phil. He is an incarcerated person that was working in R&R. And I look at him, and I say, Hey, Phil. And Phil just sticks his hand out and, like, waves me down, like, total disrespect. Because he thinks I had paroled and caught a new case, and I'm back on a new case. He didn't know that I had been gone, you know, to CMC, Wasco, Arizona. You know, I had never got out.
And of course, there was one more person we had to check in with about vehicles and prison life.
This is Rahsaan, New York Thomas, still alive from San Quentin. Go ahead.
We got him daydreaming about this drive he took one time down the California coast, bumping Chico DeBarge, The Game.
Win or lose, it's how you play life's game. If you play them all, then you're the one to blame. You're the one to blame. If I could choose, I would make a change. But it's the same old song that everybody sings. Get the money.
We miss you, New York.
I miss y'all too.
Where else are we going this season, Nige?
Okay, we are going to go down south to retrieve 3 boxes of objects that have some very heavy emotional weight.
All the things I collected over my life, they're all beautiful, they're all cool, but they're also bound up with, like, a lot of it. Angry demons and old memories.
We're going to hear kids around a campfire talking about what they would like to say to their incarcerated parents.
You don't understand at all. You don't know how upset it makes me. Why do I always cry over you? Do you ever cry over me? It doesn't seem like it anymore. Sorry. I just feel like now I'm not even motivated to even talk to him. There's never anything to talk about, and, like, I'm not even sad. I'm just angry. I have so much, like, anger.
We're going to take you to the scene of Ear Hustle's very first cooking contest.
Indeed.
Up next, I would say, is Adam.
I am Awesome Adam. I'm going to win this. This is my competition. You know, I mean, I'll encourage and support always. However, the cream must rise to the top, and that's happening with me.
And we're going to bring you untold stories from earlier this year, when COVID-19 hit the California prison system. We've got a packed season coming up.
That we do.
And we have a ton of people to thank for this episode.
Ear Hustle is a big-ass family.
Thanks to Carl Cattermole and Brenda Barungi.
Carlos Flores and the homie Ali Tambor.
Brandon Davison and Matthew Hearn.
And thanks to Jack Corey. Thanks also to Robert McNutt, Gregory Rogers, Alex Rivera, Eddie Hollingsworth, and Michael Stone.
And I'm so excited to thank Rocket in Australia and Nadja from the band Pussy Riot. They both told us great prison ride stories, but unfortunately, we just couldn't fit them into this episode. Doesn't mean we don't think they're great.
Bonus episode after the season.
Yes, I hear bonus coming.
Yeah. Thanks to Peter Ruzavin, who put us in touch with Nadja.
And to Johanna Bell, who talked to Rocket for us. And please be sure to check out their amazing podcast, Bird's Eye View, about a female prison in Australia. And you can hear more Rocket there.
Ear Hustle is produced by Nigel Poor, Rasan New York Thomas, Bruce Wallace, and me, Erline Woods.
And also, John Yaya Johnson.
Yaya!
We are so glad he joined Ear Hustle's outside team.
Indeed. This episode was sound designed and engineered by Antoine Williams, with music by Antoine Williams, David Jossie, and Dwight Chrisman.
Amy Standen edits the show, and Julie Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia.
We said goodbye to our longtime, hardworking,
so hardworking,
hustling digital producer, Erin Wade. She's gone over to our sister Radiotopia show, Criminal. They're lucky to have her.
Ear Hustle would like to thank acting warden Ron Broomfield, and as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
Hello, Ear Hustle World. This is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison. And who would have thought when we began this venture that we'd be entering into season 6? And I believe we've just scratched the surface of all the stories that, you know, can emanate out of a place like this. So welcome into the 6th edition of the Ear Hustle World. And so with that, I will say I approve this episode.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm. I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Erline Woods.
Peace.
Peace out.
They didn't have a boudet. What they call them? Boudet?
Yeah, boudet.
They didn't have a boudet on the bus.
Boudet. They didn't have a boudet. No, they didn't have a boudet, man.
I think boudets or mando.
Yeah, Europeans know how to do it.
Radiotopia. From PRX.